Hey guys, Dan Tom here with a quick intro for a new piece of content, the Protect Your Neck podcast post-fight shows with myself and Fenyo from the fight site. We're going to be separating these from the normal breakdown shows, a part of your normal podcast listening feed, but I'll be inserting these every Sunday, free previews, roughly half the show. This is more than half the show for this first one because we went long. And I will, of course, provide links in the show notes if you want to have access to these shows live and interact with them and watch them after the fact via my YouTube channel, Dan Tom MMA, joining the membership there, the Dan Clan, if you will, for $2.99 a month. Or if you do that, you also can get 50% off subscription to my Substack, where these episodes will also be available along with my additional written content. You won't be able to watch it live or interact via the Substack as far as the paid membership goes, but you'll get full access to that as a paid Substack subscriber, and free subscribers there will also receive a preview, though I'm not sure how long it'll be. You'll probably get longer previews here on the podcast feed. So without further ado, enjoy. The Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC Saudi Arabia post-fight show with Dan, Tom, and Fenyo. It was a long one, but the first one in a series to come, so strap in. Our king told the boogeyman, you have to let that raga drop. The oil down the desert way has been shaken to the top. The shaking drove his Cadillac, he went cruising down the ville. The prison was a standing. We are rolling. We're Ramblers, we are rolling. We are live. What is up, my friends? What is up, the Dan Clan? What is up in the future, I should say, because it's going to go up for the paid Substack subscribers. You guys need access to this. And what is up to everybody? Because, Fenyo, I think we're going to put like probably like the three, I don't know, like the majority of the main card up, at least for this first one, especially for free on the feeds. And, you know, maybe we'll just do something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether you're listening on the podcast feeds or I don't know, and then we'll see what YouTube allows. Substack's really cool. They're really flexible with like prices, description, you know, discounts and all that stuff. As far as that goes, so if you guys sign up, hey, what's up, Dan Clan? If you guys sign up for that, make sure you hit me up. It should tell you the instructions to DM or email me. And I'll give you guys a link for 50% off the Substack, which is $5 a month. Of course, the Dan Clan is just $2.99. And both those, you'll have access to this show. It's going to be our post-fight show. I don't know if we'll have a cool name for it, like the Dan Clan. Maybe we'll, you know, I've been listening to this movie podcast to fill time. And, you know, there's like a lot of like awards you can get. You know, it's like we can have our funniest fighter to, you know, the Johnny Walker Award, funniest fighter to, you know, in a loss kind of a deal. Not to be a dick, but like, you know, like, just like, you know, like we can have little bullshit awards, if they come up, if they're, you know, applicable for a card. We can have fun with this, folks, is the point. So, also, I'm going to check back to a post. Fenyo, I made a amongst the promotional posts and stuff for the show. I let everybody know if they reply to the comments and stuff that we'll get to it in here. I don't know how much incentive they'll have if they're not like if they can't listen to the full episode. But hey, I mean, it's still cool. You can just drop your grenade, poison the well, and keep on running, you know, and be a part of the show. You don't even have to listen, and you're a part of the show, you know, so, and for free. So if you guys want to, you know, jump in the comments there, you can. Fenyo, initial, while I scramble, you're good. So we're going to give our initial thoughts, but we'll probably like grade the show or whatever after. I'm just going to make sure this isn't streaming. I took the Twitter thing off, so it's not streaming there. So I'll probably tweet a live now. I'll do that. Lefenio, initial feels of the show, is it, I know you don't set the highest bar like me, but like, did it? You know, how did it do as far as your expectations go?
I feel like I did pretty good. I only made predictions with you. Actually, didn't thought too much about it. But I mean, let's let's check some of my like fights that I felt the strongest about. Whittaker over Oleskarov was like the main thing. You know, obviously the main event, but yeah, I mean, I felt pretty strong on Robert Whittaker's favor. I thought Oleskarov had some tools, but I felt like Whittaker was superior. Pretty much the same deal with Volkov, which we both agreed should have been the favorite if you went the analyst route instead of just like wins and losses and reach. You nerds, I told you that Volkov was going to be longer than him inside the cage.
You did. No, you made a good point of that. Yes.
Gastelum versus D-Rod, I missed a little bit. I thought it was super close. But I felt like I said on the preview that, yeah, Gastelum not even trying to make weight could play into his game, and yeah, he showed up being huge. Cardio was not an issue, so just Kelvin Gastelum. Like, I like Kelvin Gastelum, but this was just him being a bastard. So he ends up winning the fight, getting a takedown because he was way bigger than D-Rod. Even though he's like fat, but he's still heavier. You know, it helps during the wrestling exchanges, and it helps being on top. So. But I thought 1 and 2 were super close. This could have gone D-Rod's way, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a minority opinion. I just feel like... although I did see some people say that, because like, you know, some people were even arguing could it be 1 and 1, which was a more than reasonable scorecard at that point, by the way. But, of course, I was joking with the way my night was going, which we'll recap here, and was going to... and was, you know, it tends to go... I was like, the judges probably have it both rounds for Gastelum. And then, of course, he you know, secures the top time on a tiring D-Rod, limp rod, in the third. So it was... we'll definitely talk about that. Hey, sweet, you're... not only do you show up in the Dan Clan Finio, your wrench still shows up there, too. I'm hooking up the moderators and whatnot for like the Substack, but again, I'm still trying to figure out how to, you know, hook and help people out more. I'm a terrible businessman, Fenyo. I'm like trying to figure out how to give away as many subscriptions and stuff as I can. But I am curious though, if our enforcers, if they are able to get in here or if they have to be members to get in here. Either way, shout out to of course enforcer. Enforcer number one there, and enforcer number two, we got a Kudo and Ghost Phantom there. But yeah, thank you guys for the support. I'm going to get this tweet out. Result from my channel. All right. Cool. And yeah, guys, thank you guys for the support and stuff this week and whatnot. It's been a tiring week. I'm so grateful for it, but I'm so, me and Finio are both kind of out of it, you know, for same but different reasons, I'm sure. But man, we got through this first week up pretty good. You know, I'd say we got some decent reception, you know, as far as the channel goes and stuff and subscriptions and whatnot. And I don't know, I felt like I held up to my end as far as the Substack goes, the alternative card format and stuff like that. What do you think, Fenyo, as far as, you know, how did we do? How did I do for certain parts on certain things? But what do you think, man? You're just as much a part of the show now, so your opinion matters, amigo.
Yeah, I feel like we're, to be just starting, I feel like we're offering a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like obviously some people, especially some like the Dash fans that still are like a bit into analysis, but are some. More annoying. They always are like, oh, you just watch fights. What's the work in that? But then you don't have the... You never make the fucking cool reads that us, the real nerds do. So
yep. That's where I know I make fun of real quick. It's a good opportunity to actually like sing praise and God forbid connect with people. But I always give shit to MMA gambling Twitter. But that's where. We should, at least on paper, really connect, you know, analysts to the MMA gambling Twitter nerds. We're all nerds, right? But we're just different kind of nerds. And I feel like that's where we should connect because, you know, for as much as, you know, those people will talk shit, it's like, you know, I'll still hear the cappers be like, hey, man, they'll call it work, you know? They'll be like, hey, I work hard at this. They'll say the same things and characterize it the same way you do or I do, Fenyo, right? And they have the same motivations, you know? And maybe even more so because they're, you know, they're dealing with money. But, you know, it feels good to make those calls and to have those contrarian kind of calls, especially if you can show your work and have your receipts, you know? Like, it's pretty cool, you know? For us, it's analysis. For them, it's like a betting slip. But it's kind of, you know, it's kind of the same things in a way.
Yeah, but I mean, even though I don't like some sides of, like, the gambling stuff, but I do respect the people that puts on the work, you know? Mm. Even absolutely, if you are even if you're not, like, super deep into analyzing technique and shit, but if you put on the work of just, like, doing the eye test, on watching a lot of fights, on studying statistics, that is something that me as a non-better don't have to worry about that match. And, I mean, it's something that gotta be respected. I feel like a lot of people in a lot of... this is, like, a little bit off topic, but I feel like in a lot of... spaces in different things at life, you find these people that are okay with being mediocre or something, but having the excuse of, if I tried, I would be good at this, you know?
Yeah, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
You can always shit on the people that actually try, because you never try, so you always have that in your back pocket. Like, I see in the gym, like, a lot, yes. For example, guys who lift weights, and they're like kind of strong and look semi decent, but they're like, oh, if I train at powerlifting like you, I would be stronger. Or they say to the bodybuilder guys, like, oh, but if I really took my diet seriously, I would look better than you. But the thing is that you don't, right?
that's valid. Yeah, absolutely.
And when it comes to MMA, it's the same. Like, a lot of guys is like, I only train on the weekends and I'm pretty good, you know? So if I was full time like this guy in the UFC, I would be way better, but you're not doing that. So I'm not sure that gives you the right to talk shit on people. And I feel like in the analysis space, in the betting space, it is the same. Some guys are like, have winning records, playing like super safe bets only. Sure. Here and there, and like, yeah, that you're not taking any big risk, and if you fail, no one cares, because you're not making it like a big deal in your life. And when it comes to analysis, like, some guys are like very spicy with the hot takes, but you don't ever like dare to like write an article or make an actual breakdown or something, or explain to people, trying to teach people new things,
right?
Feel like a lot of people hide in that. This is not so serious to me, so it's okay if I fuck up. But when I'm right, I'm better than you because I don't take it seriously. You know that that attitude is very annoying. I feel.
I know what you mean, but at the same time, I also could see why it's so easy to, you know, fall dangerously close to the, you know, falling into the man in the arena talk, right? Not to be negative or positive about that reference, but that's a real popular one for MMA fighters, right? But you do bring up a lot of valid points surrounding that theme. So, you know, I definitely put the work in this week, and, you know, it was still a losing night. We got results here. I'm tallying them up as we speak, folks. But as far as units go, it was a small loss, surprisingly. 1.56 units. So my ads costed me because I added about 2 units of plays, which means by basic math that costed me, right? However, one of those units was a Jared Gordon play, which we'll talk about, but, you know, so it's like, again, there's a lot of these really alternative reality. Of course, I'm never living the cool alternative reality as far as those results go, but there's a lot at play, kind of like what Fenyo said, even more than I will dare give myself credit for, because I'm very biased, you know, as far as that goes. We'll go over that here, but yeah, I'm just kind of run down. I went, like, all the way to the wire last night, Fenyo, to where, like, I was just... Like, my Fridays are always busy because I'm always trying to, like, get to this 2 p.m. yoga class, my favorite class to do. And, but also, like, 2/3 p.m. is, like, the deadline for all my work. So I'm usually, like, scrambling, and everything is down to the very minute to where, like, I just missed that class. And then, you know, after that, it's just like, you know, got to get a, you know, pick up the dog poop while the sun's still out. The sun has a timeline, right? And then I got to get to, you know, certain stores or this or that before they close. The book has a I'm running to this book's got a timeline here, so I got to go to this book first. And then by the time I eat, it's not to the end of the night, and I'm like half awake by the time I get home and I'm posting my plays. I think I initially posted my plays, Fenyo, with like a picture of like a screenshot from my phone. I was so tired. And I had to like edit it and redo it, delete it and redo it. And I'm like, dude, good thing I'm not like, you know, I have a bunch of like dirty pictures on my phone or anything like that. Like, could you imagine? Like, it's like, here's my plays for the card. It's just like picture of like ex-girlfriend's titties or something. Like, oh, shit. Like, you know, like, oh my gosh, dude. I so worry about, I double check my work though, as if that's on the line, because I am like just that person, just in general, that I hate making mistakes.
Yeah.
And I constantly like make mistakes. Like, I watched this one video, this one FBI body language expert. She was like, oh, if somebody, there's two people in kind of life. There's people that can just put their cup down and not look when they're setting their cup, and there's people that have to look when they're setting their cup down. And she was like getting into these things, like the people that have to look setting their cup down are worried about security. And she's going to all these judgments of like how insecure, how PTSD, how worried they are. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I may check all these boxes, but like, and this relates back to the gambling thing with my record. And like, but I'm the kind of person where like the universe is not kind to me, you know? It's not like giving me like a grace period of like, oh, here's a couple inches to fail here, a couple inches to fail there for you, Dan. Like, no, I have to look and get it right on, because if I don't, something's going to happen. It's not just going to spill. It's going to spill on something important that's going to just butterfly and chain react, right? And that's kind of like the lesson that kind of gets constantly, you know, reinforced for me. So, you know, we talked about that last podcast here, and we'll see what lessons were reinforced here. So basically for picks, we went on the main card. Or I went, sorry, I don't want to do the we talk, because, you know, I am not you, and Fenyo's picks aren't mine, so I'm not going to drown him with me. But 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, 3-2 in the main card. God forbid I have a decent ratio on there for once. We went, 3-3, did we, though? There's like this, again, there's so many, I'm okay with an honest L. But there's just legit so many asterisk like tallies here, you know, whether we're talking about picks or plays here. But 3-3, 4-3. Sorry, no, this isn't good for podcasts. 4-3, 4-4. Again, that's another one. We could be at like 6-2 right now, to be honest. But yeah, it's 4-4, 4-5, 5-5, and then another split decision that even though I didn't have anything or didn't care, I was on the wrong end of that one too, which of course is a cusping breaker, making us negative 5-6 for picks. Not that that matters, but hey, why would you let me win there, universe? God for fucking bid, right? Get the small wins, Dan. You have to get the small wins in life. And I'm like, I'm fucking trying. There were some small wins. We'll get to those. Fenyo mentioned it. We were both on there, which another reason why I value my man's opinion here. But, yeah, for straight plays, we went 2-3 for straight plays. But, again, we arguably could have went 4-5 for the straight plays. D-Rod, Dalby, Volkov, Reaper, and Tricoli. And we'll get to the Tricoli fight. I don't want to be Mr. Oh, he was gonna, because I would never presume that for a volatile sport. But even in my air quote honest L's here, which is, I would say my honest L's are losing the D-Rod, can't complain for me, losing the Tricoli, can't complain, honest L, right? Even those like come with serious fouls, weight misses, and sketchy round scores attached. Like, it checks all those boxes, and that's my honest L, Fenyo. Of course, that's not, you know, of course that or like the close decisions or the outright robbery decisions or whatever you want to call it, like, of course those aren't represented in my losing record, though they all live there and have set up a community there, so people just see the record. But that's what's most annoying about it, because like when you break it down, it's like, holy shit, this is like, there's an ultimate reality where you're like a fucking crazy winner and like sharp, you'd be, you know Mr. Sharp dude or whatever, you know, not that I would claim to be that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So we did that on the straight plays. Only took one prop, which was my prop squad shot. Never was close, D-Rod sub. One total, And again, I don't like totals, but when I hit them, I hit them over, babies, and that heavyweight over came through. And like I was tweeting about, lastly but not leastly, for the round robins, went 1-for-4. I kept it small again, trying to stay like somewhat conservative. And we went 1-for-4 with Whitaker KO. Tricoli by sub was never close, but again, if the ref actually like punished some of the cage grabs, who knows? Gordon, which arguably should have cashed. And Kang, which was probably my least confident and least sexy leg. So no surprise, no bum out, no complaints for me on that one, but that was the fourth one. Yeah, so that was brutal. I guess we'll talk more about it as we get into it. Robert Whitaker defeated Ikram Askarov. Fanyo gave his take there. Shout out to Miguel Class, by the way. That's someone's Substack and accounts you should be supporting. He had a really just cool highlight real quick, turn that around. As far as a fainting highlight, just showing how quick Whitaker got the reads of the kicks and the lead leg lifting of Askarov. And even though that was a worry on paper for that left side, Whitaker just knew exactly what to do with it, and that was cool to see. Even though I wished he waited to round two, because what I didn't account for was I added round two, three, and four flyers. I was going to wait for a win, but as we know, I don't get those before the co-main event. I have to, like, suffer and get, like, painfully, anally raped for the whole card, as is tradition. It's true. You'll laugh, but it's true. Well, all we can do is laugh at it, right? Like, that's the best I could do. If we could laugh at it, that makes me, you know, I mean, I don't know about happy, you know? I'd be happier if I won, and, you know, we'd be happier without biological depression. But, you know, it makes me happier. So if we can have a good time, so that's awesome. But like, hey, yeah. So it's also awesome seeing, you know, the Reaper Whitaker win. I'm a big fan of him. It's like I don't know. I'm a huge fan of Dustin Poirier as well. But like, it's like Fanyo's Poirier is like me and Robert Whitaker. I don't think I've ever. He's the only fighter I've never picked against officially, and not because I'm trying to be biased. It's just the way it works out. Like the only one time I felt really bad and felt like it could have been biased was in his rematch with Adesanya. But I didn't go bet the house on Whitaker. Like, I laid the 2 units, which is betting a lot for me, right? Or anything like that. And to be fair, I showed my work saying that it was going to be a close decision. The only bet I had was, like, a Whitaker by decision prop. And even though, with my bias, and it was actually, that was a night where it was going to be a perfect night, too, where I was, like, almost, like, perfect on bets that night. It was crazy. I had, like, Jared Cannonier round two. I had Tai Tuivasa against Derek Lewis round two. Like, I was cashing. I was hot that night. These were the winning days, Fanyo. And even then, like, people were, you know, we're still making the argument that Whitaker won against Adesanya. I don't think so, by the way, for the record. I'm just saying, for what it's worth, even at my most guilty and wrong, wasn't that wrong, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's not like I'm just like biasedly picking Whitaker here.
You could see that Whitaker with some adjustments could have won that fight. It wasn't impossible, I feel. I feel like Adesanya clearly won. I don't agree with any Whitaker card.
Same.
But you could see in the fight that it wasn't as lopsided, that there was stuff that Whitaker could do.
Yeah. No, I feel that way as well. Before we move on from this fight, Fanny, I want to ask you. So some analysts that I respect brought up a point. It was one of those things where it's nothing crazy. You know, it's kind of, I don't want to say obvious, because nothing's obvious. We don't know. And it's definitely a hindsight thing. But essentially, people bringing up that since that first Adesanya fight, Whitaker hadn't been the same. And not like, you know, lazily attributing to his decisions to that. Obviously, there's a lot of context to it. Like, we talked about him facing, like, the most unkillable dudes on the planet, right?
Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot that goes into that. But at the same time, like, I totally get what people were saying and the worry people were having about Robert Whitaker, right? Now, I don't want to be hindsight, and even though, again, it was a great line, everybody who cashed on that line has every right to brag as far as a betting perspective goes. But as far as quelling the worries for where Whitaker's at in his career, where he's going, title aspirations, I know all those things aren't necessarily the same things or fair to string together, yeah. But does this change any of that for you? Or was this, you know, as cool as it was, and we don't want to shit on Ikram too much, but this was a levels shit? Or what's your opinion here?
I mean, I feel like I feel like Whittaker has shown quite a few times now that he's basically the same guy. Maybe a bit easier to hurt if we consider like the Duplessis fight. But the Costa one, I don't really blame him. Like, that was a huge shot. But the Duplessis and the Cannoneer knockdowns were like kind of scary, right? But when it comes to speed, reflexes, ability to hurt people, ability to stay focused during fights and all that kind of shit, I feel like Whittaker is not very far removed from his prime, I would say. I would still pick Whittaker against most guys. I would still pick Whittaker against Chimaev, for example. Who yeah. else is there at the top of the division? Actually, I would... There's not a rematch that Whittaker already won that I would pick against him now, for example. Like, he would run over Vettori again. He would win against Costa again. Cannoneer, who is older and is now getting Shinny, is probably also an easier fight for Whittaker this time around. And to be honest, I would go and do the same thing and pick him against Duplessis in a rematch. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
Same, yeah.
The only guy I would pick right now, like, somewhat confidently against Whittaker in the division would be Adesanya. And sure. I think a Strickland fight could be close. It really depends on how they play out, but I would also would have to side with Whittaker in that one even. So
yeah. Also, I'm glad Politan's not still at middleweight for his sake as well, because maybe if you caught him earlier, but with the way that Robert likes to fight, it would have made it much harder than that needs to be. Riskier.
Yeah, if we had a bit better like top control game, I would trust him in that fight. But
yeah,
he has like very good transitions to wrestling, but he never really does anything with the takedown. So
plus with the criteria, yeah, it's like you're not getting much out of that.
Yeah, he tried to like lay him out a decision at times in Adesanya, and I felt like those were like some of his worst moments. He was doing a lot better, like using his jab in open space, pushing Adesanya back, and then he was trying for the takedowns, and he was getting so tired, not getting anything done against the fence.
Yeah,
but that was the game plan. So I don't. Obviously, when you're watching from home, you feel like, oh, he's so dumb. This is clearly not working. He should change game plans. But you've been drilling that shit for 6 weeks. You know, it's not that easy.
Absolutely. Moving on, did Sergey Pavlovich need to change game plans? He lost via unanimous decision by Alexander Volkov. 2-30-27, 29-28. I don't know what you scored. I feel like Volkov probably got all the rounds in my book, but I'm also biased because I bet Volkov. I called it going to decision. Of course, I had the safest bet in the fight. I said was the over.
Wow. Volkov won every round. To be
yeah,
honest.
And I don't know. I felt really validated.
He kind of hurt Volkov. Sergey hurt Volkov in the third round a little bit, but he was absorbing a bunch of damage himself. He got hurt by a body kick in the third round, so they're like equal there. And then you have the volume in the side of Volkov. So I don't see how you scored that round for Sergey. For Sergey, to be honest. But it was close.
There was a couple times.
First, he was getting his ass kicked.
Yeah. But there was a couple times, and this is always sways people, I think, and tricks people too, is that, and we can talk about this further, actually, because it comes through, instead of complaining about all these decisions, I'm trying to be constructive about it and learn lessons, which is the tough part about like some of these losses, where it's just like, what's the lesson here that I should fucking, pay chalk price, which is favorites, so you're having to give a lot to get a little bit for a guy you can't trust and barely covers his price with a bunch of bullshit, and for him to even cover the price, in the first place. Like, what's the lesson there? Sorry, I went on a tangent. I lost myself there. Follow the stream back, Dan. But for this one, I felt, I'll probably come back to it, but I just felt validated, Fenyo, because this was one again where I called as far as like anytime we have drama, anytime we have you know, former trading partners, even without the drama. Like, all either of those things standing alone is enough for like a 9-to-1 hit ratio that it's gonna have be a tedious fight, you know, or it's gonna go long. It's not gonna be a finish, you know. And I keep saying it, but time after time, and even like, you know, people I respect, I'm not like trying to like throw shade, but I'm just saying because this represents most people. But there was that clip where they were getting mad at each other, right? And that was spreading around in the face-offs for yesterday after the weigh-ins, and they had to be separated. And people were going, oh, see, like, the overtakes were bad, pretty much by saying, like, you know, like, look, these guys are, like, overbetters in shambles, like, basically saying, like, this is not going to, look, they're angry, this is not, like, no, that's
the opposite. It's like, and it's very easy to explain, too, like, when you're so invested in a fight, like, yeah, sometimes it happens that guys overthrow and shit, but they're mostly nervous, more nervous about not losing than they are about getting a knockout. So that's why you see it like time and time again that these like very like bad blood fights turn into like slow fights.
Dude, there's a reason why Travis Brown and Andre Arlovsky was like such a rare goddamn occurrence. In general, for them, the way they fight, it didn't make any sense. That's a wacky example, right?
Yeah, that was insane, like bizarre word shit.
But the way everybody acts though is that everybody acts as if they expect that every time we have any kind of drama, any kind of former training partners, and I never understood that. And especially as I do this more, I really try not to talk about my own experiences, and if I do, I really try to play them down. Rightfully so, by the way, right? Because we're talking about pros here at the highest level in this show. But one thing I always say is that, like, from my experiences from my sport karate days to otherwise and MMA and whatnot, dude, some of the worst, most boring striking fights are with training partners you know well. The worst, most boring rounds, whether it's in practice or when you meet, God forbid, I meet these people in the tournaments. It was shitty. You knew each other. Maybe on a subconscious level, you care about each other. Whether or not you want to acknowledge that. There's so many factors, right? Kind of to what you're alluding to, Fenya. Like, it's not that hard to explain or see.
Yeah, there's many factors. Like, even if there's like bad blood, when someone used to be a friend, especially at heavyweight, that this is something that you gotta consider. Is like, a bad concussion can fuck you up. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And do you really want to like carry that for the rest of your life? People say like fighters don't care. A lot of them do care.
But... Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It just takes one, man. That's the thing. You have to know. Have to come to grips to. And I will say another thing that kind of paid off. Like, you know, as far, this is the analysis that doesn't matter that I usually like brag about being right, because A, it's silly and stupid, and B, I'm usually losing on everything else, so why not focus on what I do get right, I guess. But remember I said I gave that exact as an example, right, Fenyo? I said it's like a police shakedown, like the way they watch everyone, like you don't realize like these guys are they're both more funnier than they get credit for, but they're legitimately heated up. And from Pavlovich shoving Volkov after, to their, again, back to the sighting, the stare down, like we were talking about on the show, we called it on the show, like this is like people are like wondering like, oh, they're really that mad at each other, what's going on? Like, and that was great because I'm a big fan of the show The Wire, Fenyo, anytime I can reference it. And I had that perfect scene. Did you see the scene that I use where they were they're fucking with each other? It was perfect, right? Was that
it is, it's pretty much that, like
the analogy for like how they do their business. I should have maybe used Hunter Campbell instead of making Sean Shelby, because everybody's so busy glazing Hunter Campbell right now. Like, oh, he fucks over the guys harder than Dana. He doesn't use a condom when he fucks them over. Like, I don't know. Like,
I don't think that's very cool, but
yeah, no, I don't think so either, by the way. But it is, either way, you can use whatever name, Mick, Sean, Hunter. That's essentially the analogy for fighters. I love doing that, you know, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there's a perfect one for like a matchmaking analogy in that fight where Pacino's talking to Brad Pitt about, or Leonardo DiCaprio about, oh, they're making you face the up-and-coming guys, huh? You're at that point of your career now. That's what they think of you, you know? And, or Leon the Professional, Danny Aiello, talking to Leon. It's like a perfect MMA and the manager when he's like, you know, Leon wants the money, and he's like, well, why don't I just hold it on for you? You know, you want some money, you come to Uncle Tony, I'll take care of it for you. Like, you know, like forcing a medium where one doesn't need to be there, all for the manipulation of the worker. You know. So that was so it was like I can't help but have fun and see these parallels. So that was almost just as validating for me as getting the bet right. Not that I want these guys, I actually want these guys to be friends, but it's just like it proves the point of the stuff that we talk about as far as business practices, right? All of us in our own ways, right, Fenyo? Not just me, obviously.
Yeah, I think people, there are like two opposite camps. Obviously, most people fall in the middle, but there are people that take like way too much out of interviews and stuff like that. And I feel like,
of course, yeah,
there's something to take, like, right? Mm-hmm. Like, especially when you have like a lot of tape and precedents, like, yeah, some fighters, for example, it made me nervous when Chito was like very serious in the press conference against O'Malley. Mm-hmm. They gave me like super bad vibes.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't know if he injured or it was just a bad fight for Chito. I don't know. But it was like, yeah, this guy usually is like having fun. He's like talking his shit. But yeah, he was like a kind of reserved, very serious, talking about a lot about his country more than anything personal. And that gave me like a super bad vibe in that fight.
Yeah.
Because like when someone acts out of character is because something is going on.
Yeah, there's that too, for sure. And you're good about keeping that same energy too, as far as like sometimes it is something as reductive as maybe, you know, they're having an off night as far as performances go, even without the emotion. Like, there's always that too.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
you never can discount. You know, and some fighters do it more than others, like Aldana, you know, who we like, by the way, but like she has performances where she clearly shit the bed, so to speak, you know.
Yeah, like even in the Macy Chason fight, I thought she was not showing up. Like,
no,
she was
hiding.
She was fighting very hard. She was trying.
Yeah.
But she was not sharp that night at all. Like, she was not finding the shots. The shot selection was bad. She was probably not even sticking to the game plan in that one. And she ended up winning with that freak, like,
yeah,
up kick to the liver. But
hey, there's another one I got.
That's another thing that can happen in MMA. Like sometimes fighters are like people gave a lot of shit to Dean Thomas when he said that Leon was checking out.
Right.
I'm pretty sure Leon was actually checking out.
He
was like, okay, I'm gonna throw a head kick. You know, it's not like, oh, I have this secret weapon that I've been that I've been saving for the fifth round. No, the dude was like a mess. You can tell by his corner screaming at him.
Yeah.
And sometimes in MMA, stuff like that happens because, like, even if you are dejected or you are checking out of the fight, you can still land something sometimes.
Very true.
And like, maybe he had this moment of clarity, but I think what Dean Thomas, his analysis, because he has a lot of experience with fighters, and especially very frustrating fighters like Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
I thought he was spot on.
Yeah, the fact that that's Leon true. Yeah, that's very true.
Leon was not seeing his coach eye to eye. He was ashamed. I feel like everything Dean said there was correct. And the fact that Leon landed the head kick and won the title doesn't invalidate what happened before. Like, he was defeated. He was checking out of the fight. And that kind of stuff happened. Like, here, Popovich tried to get hype up during the third round. And the exchanges were, like, super 50-50. And at the end, when he had his very last chance, he held into the clinch. It wasn't Volkov. It was him pressing against the fence and not trying to get the finish because it was so high stakes for these guys, you know.
Yeah, and I wonder.
It's like counterproductive in that sense. Like, why, if winning is so important to this guy, why he's holding to the fence? But it's because when you're so emotional, it's it's tough, man.
Yeah, I wonder how that's going to affect him going forward. Like, sometimes it's not a bad knockout that can change a career. Sometimes it's that frustrating, like, beating round after round that you'll see, like, change some guys' careers, especially, like, the bigger, not to be bullied, like, in a mean way, but, you know, that kind of type of fighter, right? When they get when they get exposed kind of and over, you know, on a bigger stage, they don't recover as well from it. I know Paulo Costa got a lot of those accusations in some senses, but you hear this a lot, right?
And you gotta see, and you gotta put it into context, for example, because people say, oh, but Pavlovich already came from the Overeem loss, for example. But it's different because he didn't have the reputation he has now when he lost to Overeem. So he was like, it was a lot easier to say, okay, that went very bad. It was short notice. People will know now who I am. But it's not the same when you have this reputation of, I fuck everyone up. And then you get knocked out yourself, and then you try to come back, and you lost a lopsided decision. It can mess you with your mental side, for sure.
Yep, good on Volkov for fighting more southpaw. He hasn't done that in a while. He used to do that more in his earlier days. He
it's probably something that he saw in their the training sessions. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you got to keep safe again. I mean, that was a thing both validated the pick. And the analysis and the smarts of Volkov for being able to realize that, oh yeah, as dangerous as a puncher is, this is like the one guy who we talked about as far as my main reason for picking him is that Volkov, you have to counter kicks to get to him, right? That's how you traditionally get to him, and Pavlovich doesn't counter kicks. And yeah, that was the reason I picked, and yeah, it played out, and yeah, I cashed my bet. But honestly, even prior, before I knew the result, just being a fan of Pavlovich, that worried me that I picked up that read, Fenyo, right? Because at the same time, it's like, okay, if you're training it and you're training enough, you should know what works, right? Hence what we just said and saw with Volkov, right? But that's a two-way street. Shouldn't Pavlovich know what works? And okay, so maybe he was losing to Volkov in the gym as well, which isn't always the case, fights in gyms, but... Okay, maybe that's that one sample size, but still, it's still troubling because essentially it's just like, wait, shouldn't he specifically be good at countering kicks because he's training with Volkov and has so many years? Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like whether or not you're smart enough to figure it out, there's also just the organic nature of, oh, this guy's a kicky guy, and he's clearly being, what we saw in the fight, he's clearly being kicky with me because he knows... I'm dangerous in the pocket. How do I fix this, right? And there should be some kind of organic mechanism there, even in practice. And in that practice, you develop muscle memory, and that eventually starts translating into the fights, just like drilling would, you know, in its own ways. And so that's just a huge audit. That's just a huge black mark against Pavlovich. You get what I'm saying here? That he doesn't do that.
Yeah.
And it just showed.
It's weird. Sometimes a lot of fighters that are associated with other fighters, you can see how they counter their other techniques, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like, for example, Islam Makhachev, a lot better on the back foot because you know Khabib was pressuring him all day. And for example, who else? Like Luke Rockhold, who in AKA was training with DC and Kane so much. The counter wrestling, the same. And here is like, maybe Pavlovich is one of those guys that do not connect the dots between sparring and fighting. There are these kind of fighters that they spar so different from what they fight that they have trouble applicating the stuff. Maybe because they spar too light, or maybe because I don't know, like for example, Strickland is a great example that has like 1,000 videos of him going nuts for like on sparring.
Yeah.
But when it is a real fight, like, and Strickland can get aggressive and he can be a damaging fighter. I'm not saying that he's like inoffensive. Obviously, a very good fighter. But I'm saying like, when it's a real fight with actual stakes, he will always be safety first.
Sure.
He won't take the risks that he takes. And maybe for Pavlovich, like, he knows how to catch a kick, for example, but he have Especially because Volkov is so long that he's the type of guy that you catch a kick and he still nails you with the right hand.
Sure.
So maybe he there was something a bit of that. I'd rather not do this and I'd rather wait for my opportunity. You know,
it's just funny.
And maybe,
I was gonna say the guy's built like a juggernaut. You know what I'm saying? Like his style, like you don't even have to have like super accentuated checks. You just have to know some basic defense and know how to punch when with the kicks. Like kind of like you know the same principles that he's already applying where he's punching with the punches. He does that great. Punch with the kicks. You know it doesn't really. You know you don't have to be. You know you don't have to be doing Muay Thai pass throughs and you know crazy checks or anything. Like step into it and punch with the kicks.
For example, If you watch Pavlovich, like he's not like a, he's not so much as a counter puncher as he's so.
We're live again, so hopefully this just adds to the broadcast, I guess, and then I can just edit, you know, edit the stuff out, video and audio wise, when I throw it on the feeds. Sorry, folks, but yeah, we were pretty much done with the beating the dead horse. I was just gonna say, Fenya, that I don't know if we should be too surprised with Pavlovich having a limited game, being that this is heavyweight, so
yeah, for sure.
Gastelum versus Rodriguez. I was saying I wanted to hear your take on that because you said that D-Rod had arguments for rounds 1 and 2. That you thought there were arguments.
Maybe I missed some big shots, but from what I saw, I thought the Gastelum had the more appealing to the judges landings. But I thought damage, if you go like damage, because it was pretty close. Like, D-Rod was landing hard. He was shaking the head of Gastelum. He was connecting to the body. For example, you never know the level of experience that the judges have. But for example, when it comes to body shots, Gastelum had a lot of big body shots that were landing in not the best places. I don't score those that highly. It reminds me, for example, a lot of people were like excited about because Rob Font never goes to the body that much. He was going to the body a lot against Chito, but most of it was like a wide right hook to the body that was landing like over the kidneys in a part that is not very damaging, and you could tell that it didn't do much for him in that fight. Same deal with Gastelum. When he was a few times he threw the straight left, but he was mostly looping and not really landing like in the abdominal area, mostly in the back, in the heart part, very muscled. While Rodriguez was catching him like with not big shots, but he was catching like right in the middle of the abdomen, on the liver. So those are more damaging for sure.
I agree.
Gastelum,
yeah.
When it comes to headshots, it's the same. Gastelum, and they hurt, but he's standing a lot in the like the hard part of the skull, as opposed to D-Rod that was finding the chin a lot. And obviously, like Gastelum, very tough guy, but you gotta still like weigh those shots. Like it's not like the most powerful shot is not always the shot that hurts the most. So, for example, and I feel like, not in this fight because there were barely any kicks thrown, but very loud body kicks that land on the arm, I feel like sometimes are scored higher than a body kick that actually sneaks under the arm and lands very hard and damaging.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was going to say, in regards to Pavlovich, in regards to this fight, in regards to other fights lower on the card, in regards to fights that, Fenyo, I constantly find myself on the wrong side of. This is what I was touching on earlier, where you got to kind of learn from results, right? And, like, that's what I went on the tangent of earlier, by the way, I didn't pick up. I said, I always complain because the wrong lessons are being learned, and I'm somebody who's genuinely, whether I win or lose, I'm trying to learn, right? That's why I love martial arts. I'm trying to learn, right? And what I can draw as far as these things, you know, you talk about body shots and skepticism as far as the judges go. I totally agree with you on those things, obviously, when it comes to that. But we look at it like, what's the common thread here? Like, you know, we could joke and be like, it's my anti-athlete bias, you know. And that and to be fair, I call myself out on that, you know, just like other analysts, like my guy Connor Rebush does. That's why I had Connor on for top 5 athletic cheaters, because we both We both just, that's like our, that's definitely something that, you know, you can fairly accuse us of, right? But not even from that, just from that perspective, right? Like, oh, maybe I need to stop, you know, picking all the, you know, the soggy dick specials, all the washed old guys, you know? Like, no, there's something more to pick up from that. And I think it's a lot of the athletic, explosive for those common descriptors. Those are used for people that I'm usually picking against. Those are used for people that I'm usually losing bets against. Those are used for people that I'm picking against and losing picks and bets against in the most slimmest of fashions, because in these fights, whether they're legitimately close, like we'll talk about, you know, Gordon and Hack Parast, or, you know, maybe there's a much more of an argument, like we're talking about Dalby and Renat possibly, right? Depending on your purview there. A lot of these guys, well, who are they? Well, you know, Gordon's a lot more slower, which, by the way, you know, back to that Jacoby read that I had, you know, the same with the Poirier Oliveira, the thing where if you're an orthodox fighter and you do the slow lifting knee thing to a southpaw who can counter, you're getting you're getting lit the fuck up, right? And Gordon was doing good in the boxing, but every time he did that knee up, he got lit the fuck again, right? That's a, it's a weird fucking specific read that I made, but it's there. It's like, it's
yeah,
a fucking,
it happens very often, yeah.
It's like right there, you know, which is why I was worried with for Volk that he kept leaning on going to the knee lifting, like super heavy, like, and you know, Makhachev was able to adjust. But anyways, before I get too off, is what I'm saying is back to this fight is Gaslam. It's more appealing to the judges, right? Like, he's exploding, and it, even though a lot of it's the guard, and D-Rod was doing a good job of rolling, just like Gordon was, right? Very similar. They're both very boxing-centric guys. The judges, from the judges to the casual eyes to the commentary, right? Because earlier I was going to say, too, like, I think there was a couple times where they said Volkov was rocked when I don't think he was rocked.
I think it was either...
Round two.
A couple of times, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And
he was acting like Volkov was dead to rights, and he was fine.
Yeah, and usually it's Bisping, and I love Bisping, but usually Bisping's really bad about that. And, you know, it's like, you know, like
Bisping, especially, is very emotional when it comes to that. Like,
especially when it's like fighters that he's friends with, like he trains with, where like he should be checking his bias, but like whenever like Cheeto would hit your dong, he goes, "Your dog is hurt. He is hurt by that." Like, so like it made like the controversy extra controversial, because he's calling the fight for everybody to hear it, right? So yeah. you kind of hear that. Thank you for the likes, folks. But like, it fools everybody. To be fair, not just to pick on the judges or not just to call people casuals, right? Like, even like the fighters who are in the commentary booth get fooled by this. But the ironic part is that to your point, as far as the arguments you're making for shot selection, is that, and what I'm talking about, Fenyo, is the very thing. As far as my hypothesis for what's doing them favors, is arguably what's hurting them most, because not only is it the effect of the strikes and the counters and the disruptive checking shots that Rodriguez was using, right? All these things are more effective when the guy's running into him. So, and Kelvin, with his lancing, non-adjusting, repetitive-ass style that's got him in trouble before, it kept running him right into the wall, but like Kelvin's done prime versions of him, he kind of just chin and cardio bullies through it, even though his tactics are limited, he's not adjusting, and he's actually running himself, and he's making the offense more effective. But the sad part is, perception-wise, it looks like he's being more effective, even though he's both running the risk and increasing the damage that he's taking.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason why I was scared on the first fight of the night between Long and Lee. Because Lee was for sure winning the damage equation with all the knees to the body, but I was like, are the judges are going to see this? I'm not right. Super sure. And I thought it was 30-27, and they scored it like a split 29-28, so...
Yeah, and then also keep in mind, and again, not, sorry we're jumping around, but hopefully we'll just blow through the rest of these fast since we're pretty much already touching on them. But that's something else people complain about, and justly so, where, you know, people are finally learning the criteria, right? And then you'll see judges do it, right? Where, like, in that fight, that Lee fight, they did it, right? You know, even though they were split, it went to the, air quotes, right guy, correct? And yeah. There was another fight where it was Kyung Ho Kang? No. They gave a 10-8. I think it was Godzi and Ribeiro where they gave a 10-8. And one, it was one of the judges' scorecards I was getting criticized in Godzi Lulav Ribeiro, where he, and I respect it. Like, I don't agree with it, but I both respect it and can see where the judge was going, where they rewarded the near guillotine catch, because technically that, not that the criteria is written this way, folks, but with the interpretation, people tend to be reductive and interpret it this way, where they go, oh, well, he was closest to winning the fight in that round, so I'm going to give him the round. He had the biggest moment, right? You hear that, especially if it's a close round. And this round wasn't necessarily close, but Ribeiro comes close with that guillotine, right? Shout out to Liam on the fight, the prop squad that I'm on. He actually had Ribeiro by submission. As somebody myself who always constantly complains about coming close, I keep that same energy. My heart goes out to other people when I see them get so close, right? But yeah, so, and then that same judge also went 10-8. Which again is not, it's something that I've been warning about for years since they implemented this criteria shift, right? Years ago, which was that it's going to cause people to overcorrect the steering wheel. And you still see people doing it, right? And I'm a fan of 10-8s. I'm a fan of giving more credit to grappling, which this criteria isn't really friendly to grappling, right? But even in this case, you know, with that Ribeiro and Gajiazulov fight, you saw one of the judges getting a little too happy, right? A little too contrarian with his, you know, almost leaning into it too much. But then for Fakhretdinov Dalby, they go back to, you know, and it wasn't like a clear, you know, there's people that I respect that also bet the side, or the people that I respect that know the criteria as well. And even though they scored it for Dalby, they were much more kinder, saying it wasn't like a robbery, like everybody's making it out. Because it's hard to tell, like, people, the only people that were complaining were the people that bet. And I was distracted.
I mean, I was complaining, but...
yeah, that's true. See, so, like, there was legit people complaining, too. Like, Ryan Wagner, another analyst I respect outside of you, Kapoza, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, these people, you know, I respect their opinions a ton. And they were like, whoa, I don't see how he won that. But again, the point is, even if it wasn't, like, a Diego Sanchez coming forward, or, like, a blatant 2006, I'm going to hold you down, lay and pray decision kind of a deal. As far as damage versus control, it wasn't as clean cut, like Renat was doing some damage. The point is, they clearly lean the other way as far as the wrestler cage, the more wrestler guy is scoring that fight. So they're not being consistent within their own events even, you know, and that's what people complain about. That makes sense, Fenyu? And I'm sure, you probably don't disagree with that.
No. Actually, yeah, I agree. Sometimes it's hard to go on the judge. I mean, I don't like going out at the judges so hard, because sometimes they cannot see the shots.
Yeah.
But other times, like, I feel like there are some stuff that still judges haven't caught up yet. I feel like it's the big body work is not getting ignored as bad. But there are some shots that are so good and judges don't give a shit. Like, for example, Chris Curtis has this, like, counter left uppercut to the body.
Yep.
They never give a shit about that.
No.
And it's such a damaging shot. Like,
it is, and especially because he's doing it open stance. Like the shot you were talking about, Kelvin's not scoring as much. The reason why is because it's a closed stance. Like, usually as the southpaw, that shot would hit harder, right? Because you're at a different angle.
Yeah.
Like, I actually been falling in love with the more, I love straight crosses and jabs to the body, but I've actually been falling in love with the kind of just the short hooking shot I've been doing in a lot of my combos lately. And but that's also because I'm a southpaw, and a lot of my combos work on, you're already far off to the angle, it's open side, it creates a whole different angle. When you're the close stance matchup, even with southpaw versus southpaw, it's the same thing, it just flips. So now your power side and slash their power vulnerability side, it's not the same either way. You're not as powerful, and they're more protected.
Yeah, for sure. It's just quality of the shots. I feel like people go too much by power, and I feel like sometimes accuracy and placement are like very key in the amount of damage. A lot of I've said this, like, sometimes you scored around when the volume is similar, the guy that hit harder is not necessarily the guy that won.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a really good
like
point.
For example, like a hard jab to the forehead, against like a medium jab to the shin. Like the one to the jab that lands to the shin sucks way more.
Yes. Yeah. Get your towels ready. Get the mops ready to sop up the timeline. Just sop everything up.
It's glazing time.
It's glazing time. Shara, pull it. Ah! Magomedov defeats. I'm going to say it like that every time, too, now. Defeats Antonio Tracoli. I don't know why I'm saying him. Like, he's Italian. That just doesn't make any sense. VO KO punches round three with assist from the referee. with the Goddard with the assist. No, just kidding. But
it's not like it would have changed the result of the fight, but the inconsistency is so weird. Like, I'm okay with him taking the position when he's on the offense, because fighters never get punished for grabbing the cage on the offense. Uh-huh. So I'm okay with that. But then you gotta keep the same energy when the other fighter is like insanely grabbing the cage in a fight that they should be 1-1.
And that's the thing we're talking about. It's hard to get. I'm with you, Fenyo, and I try to find a balance, like not be somebody who's like coming at the judges so hard. And the refs, right? But at the same time, like, it's hard to defend them when you have the highest level ones, like guys I respect, like Goddard, Herzog, or these higher level judges who I defend, and they're the ones that even they themselves, they can't stay consistent within the same shows. It's a tough pill to swallow, right? You know.
Yeah, I feel like when it comes to Goddard, it's. I usually like him. I think he's one of the better ones. But he was off tonight for sure. Especially because the Tracoli fence grab.
Yeah.
You could warn that for sure. But he went straight to take the position and then not even a warning for Sharabula. That's very weird.
Yeah, and everybody's making jokes like, oh, check his account and yada, yada, yada. But here's the fucked up part, because I don't want to... It's real dangerous to feel certain tinfoil hat talk, you know, obviously. We've seen in the last few years, especially in my country, it's conspiracy talk, right? It can get dangerous, so I try to really respect that and not, like, even in entertainment joking throw it out as much as I, you know, probably, you know, would have years ago. But man, you know, this is the problem. This is another problem, though, folks, with whether you give a shit about it or not, with A, low fighter pay, and B, the bodies of power, whether it's the UFC or the Saudis who are now getting TV time and shit. There is a danger when people have so much power that way and other people don't have power. It's not some liberal woke stuff. Like, no, it's it's because it opens up the alley for really dangerous stuff. You know, like, you hear things in the Olympics where, like, you know, Cuba and Russia and, like, certain countries with these dynamics where they intersect are kind of ripe for corruption, because you have one party where this title means so much and grants them absolute power. And then another party over here in, like, Cuba, for example, in this example, where it's life-changing there, but it's more at the same time, money is just as life-changing. And if you offer that instead, they might take that, you know, and you hear these things, these stories like that, right? And it's a similar power dynamic at play, where it's, like, it's not just the fighters. It's also low pay for, like, you know, for people... Another reason why I defend the judges, like, these guys don't get paid that much, and it's like, what do you expect? When who are we, you know, you want fighters, you want all these top level people to be judges, and they're not really doing a good job of attracting people to the position, you know, and it's really low paying, you know, and then the powers that be there, which is the commission, and they not only abuse their power, but they also work in cahoots with the other powers that be, only making the power stronger. And the structure itself and the people holding up and the people who built and are responsible for the structure are the ones getting fucked, which is what I mentioned before, as far as I was really disillusioned as far as going to, you know, doing the judging meetings and stuff and hearing people, you know, from the judges themselves to the way guys like unabashedly talk, like Mike Mazzulli is saying, hey, we look out for our own. We look out for our own. He's not talking about, like, what the problem people are complaining about. God forbid we actually solve the fucking problem. His first priority is looking out for his people. You know? It's like, well, you guys are... No, your priority is look out for other people. You were an athletic commission. Your job is to look out for other people, not your own. And then you go to the judges' meetings and they tell you that, you know, certain commissions, because of their, you know, again, swinging their dicks around just for every inch instead of like for actual good, but just to show how fucking big it is, right? They'll tell you in the judging things that, like, listen, this is the right way to do it, but we're not going to lie to you. If you go and you judge this way in every commission, there are certain commissions out there, and we're not going to say that they're wrong. They're going to do what they're going to do, but they're going to get mad at you for judging things a certain way. This is within the United States. We're not even getting into, like, conspiracy Saudi money talk. This is just, like, commission to commission in the United States, folks, that... And it's politics. It's like any other job. It's like, you know, I'm probably not going to get a job with the UFC because I've talked too much shit publicly, right? You know what I'm saying? And it's like them. It's not just talking shit. It's the way they work. If you don't work the way the commission likes, you aren't going to get invited back to that state. And they'll blatantly tell you that. And they even follow that up by saying, again, well-respected judges, by the way, who I respect, so I'm not going to throw them under the bus. But they'll say, and they'll clarify. They'll go, I'm not saying that's right because technically it's not. I'm just explaining to you that if you're taking this course, you want to be a judge. If you want to be a working judge, this is what you're going to have to deal with. That's all I'm going to say. So that alone, right? That kind of, you know, that's kind of like, not that I believe in Santa Claus or treat them like they're fucking Santa Claus, but that's enough to not make you believe in Santa Claus anymore, right?
Like, yeah, it's complicated because, like, the U.S. has this whole thing with the athletic commissions and the UFC takes so much advantage of the athletic commission shit because they are like, we don't pick the judges, we don't pick this. But like, how many times we've heard like Dana White saying, okay, that referee sucked, he's off for the night. So
yes,
why is the athletic commission allowing Dana White to dictate what referees are working for the night?
Like, and judges too. That whole move we're talking about for the criteria move. It stopped for a minute because of Jan Błachowicz, Israel Adesanya, because Dana White got pissed that Błachowicz got a 10-8 because people were back to what I've been calling for years now, because it goes back to then what I predicted. They were going to overcorrect the steering wheel, and Dana White saw that, got in a hissy fit about it with the Jan Błachowicz Adesanya fight in the Apex. And
yeah, Dana White hates the 10-8s, by the way, like, and the reason, I think, and this is like conspiracy theory territory.
Hey guys, sorry for that abrupt interruption over here, but gonna have to cut you off there. We gave you the bulk of the episode, of course. We're gonna be giving you guys roughly half the episodes every Sunday here in the podcast feed for you loyal podcast listeners that I appreciate so much. But if you want full access to the show, full versions, video versions, or the ability to watch live as well as contribute to the show in the chat live, you can go to my YouTube channel, Dan Tom MMA, subscribe for free. But if you want to contribute again and watch live, full access to these after the fact, you will have to join the membership for $2.99, the Dan Clan, if you will. But if you do that, you get access to all that. You get to support me, and you'll also get 50% off your Substack subscription. You just got to email me or DM me for that link with your proof of purchase there for the subscription, and of course the Substack. You'll also have access to these shows after the fact, full versions, video, as well as all the other written content and stuff I'm doing over there, which is also at the same address, Dan Tom MMA. So my social handles, the YouTube channel, the Substack, where you can find this, all the same handle, at Dan Tom MMA, and we'll provide you guys as much free stuff plus the normal free stuff like usual, so no fret there. Thank you guys, and enjoy the week.